Now, a couple of things to lead us into our message for today.
You formed me at the mountain's high. You bless us with this gift of life. Every little leaf we have, your grace supplies. So freely you've given your
You may want to turn the volume up for this next short video because the sound quality, because of the age of the video. So anyway, and it's very short, so pay attention.
Yeah. gracious. I just sold the farm for $50 an acre. They told me a storm was coming.
$50 an acre? Why, you've been swindled.
Who bought it?
Oh, Mr. Clifford, two other men. They've gone to Fairport to record the deed.
Boys, we gotta stop them before they record that deed.
We can't stop them in these oily clothes.
Why not? The oily point catches the wine.
Quiet. Go! We gotta get some dry clothes. Hurry.
Come on,
go.
Come on.
Well, the late great comedian Red Fox, when he was appearing before a live audience, had this shtick that he did. He would say, "I lost my wallet. And if anybody finds the wallet, it's mine. In that wallet is a picture of my wife and a $50 bill. And I want you to know, I don't care about that picture of my wife. You just bring me back my $50. I thought that was an appropriate beginning because our message today is, what's in your wallet? A title that we borrowed from the Capital One commercials. But actually, without realizing it, those commercials touch on a very significant spiritual principle, the law of prosperity. Generally speaking, sharing a message related to prosperity is one of my least favorite things to do for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that as soon as you begin to talk about money, you generally can feel all the oxygen being sucked out of the room. Here he goes, talking yet again about how much the church needs money and leaning on us to contribute more and more often. But the second reason is that aside from that first possibility, I cannot effectively talk about money or abundance without really asking you or challenging you to sign on to something that really is more difficult than writing a check or opening your wallet. Money is the single biggest cause of divorce in the United States. And it also came very close to ending my relationship with Unity very early on. The first experience that Susan and I had with Unity was at Unity Northwest Church in Des Plaines. We showed up there one Sunday, and our shared reaction was, "Wow, where have you been all my life?" The message that we received and the ongoing messages that we received just resonated what I felt and what I believed for basically my whole life. And I loved the practicality of it. And I adored the metaphysics of it all. Everything was just peachy. Then late in that year, in November, I received a letter from the church. The letter was affirming the principle of tithing. And I don't recall exactly, but I think it also included a biblical reference from the book of Malachi. And finally, the letter asked for a response in the form of a pledge. Tell us how much money you would be willing to commit to donating over the next year. My reaction to that letter was extremely negative. It was not because the letter was asking for money, but because it was evoking the principle of tithing 10%. I remember I went to the then minister, Patty Pipia, and asked, "You know, tell me something. How is that Unity is all about the metaphysics of the Bible, but when it comes to money, all of a sudden, things get literal really quick?" Again, I was not opposed to giving. I was reacting to something that I thought was a little bit hypocritical. A couple of years later, I had more discussions with Joanne Ballard, who took over as the interim spiritual leader of the church. She tried to explain to me that it wasn't about adhering to a literal interpretation of a Bible verse, but rather it was about engaging in a process that was important for spiritual growth. For a long time, I entrenched myself in my stubbornness, refusing to consider what Joanne was trying to share with me. However, against my guarded judgment, I agreed to take a Four T's class at the church, and it really did help turn things around for me. So if you're concerned that I'm going to ask you to open your wallets this morning, relax. If you should come to open your wallets or your checkbooks this morning, next month, or next year, or 10 years from now, that should only be a decision that you reach with an understanding and appreciation of how it reflects and directs your own spiritual journey. Besides, what I really hope to pry open a wee bit this morning isn't so much your wallet. It's your heart and your soul. When I was growing up, our family never had much. We lived in a poor neighborhood, and our family was one of the poorer ones in that neighborhood. In their entire lives, my parents never had a bank account of any kind, checking or saving, and they always were in debt. I do remember a plan my dad came up with to save money. The construction of their bed had these square metal posts, and the posts had these metal caps on the top of them. And my dad took one of these posts to work where he welded the cap on it so it couldn't be removed, and then cut a slit in the top for coins to be dropped into the bedpost. And the saving began. Any loose change, pennies, nickels, dimes, or whatever, were dropped through the slot in the bedpost. It was a great plan, a huge success, until one day when they really needed the money, and poor dad literally had to cut through the bedpost to get his hands on it. I share this with you not to gain any sympathy. The fact of the matter is, I really think we all were pretty happy. However, I came to realize that we never had much because we never expected much. We pretty much had a consciousness of lack, and I truly believe that the universe provided us exactly with what we expected. And we never expected more than what the world told us that we should expect. In her book, The Soul of Money, Lynn Twist points out three toxic myths of scarcity. There's not enough, more is better, and that's just the way it is. And we pretty much bought into all three of them. The point here is that wealth or poverty are not functions of what you do or don't have or how much money you do or don't have. This is world think. Rather, wealth or poverty are states of mind. And very much related to this is that your states of mind are directly related to your spiritual journey and your spiritual awareness, your consciousness. Let me say it a little bit differently. Your relationship with money, or what you have in your wallet, is directly related to your spiritual awareness. But if you accept what I'm saying, don't fall into the trap of thinking that more is better. If you have $100 in your wallet, it doesn't mean you are more spiritually aware than if you have $5 in your wallet. And if you have $5 in your wallet instead of $100, it doesn't mean you are less spiritually aware. It isn't about how much you have. It's all about the energy that you give to what you do or you do not have. You can have $1 billion stashed away somewhere, and you will live in poverty if you think it's not enough. Statistically, winners of the lottery often end up filing bankruptcy. Why? Because notwithstanding having millions of dollars, they still are living their lives with lack consciousness. I remember the early months of my first marriage. My then wife, Phyllis, and I were not impoverished by any means. But there were a few occasions in which I wanted a pizza. And neither one of us had any cash in the house. But guess what? We had soda bottles. In our pantry, there were lots of empty bottles. And in the emptiness of those bottles, we found gold, enough to run them over to Jewel, get our deposit, enough money to pay for a pizza. And I got to tell you, every bite of that pizza was wonderful. I was high on the knowing that we had tapped into what appeared to be nothing, and we were now tasting pizza. As the years passed and we became more affluent, we would routinely order pizza, but it never brought the same satisfaction. I never felt the same sense of pleasure that I had with my soda bottle pizza. This is exactly why we should say grace. Give thanks before we eat. We should never lose our sense of awe in knowing that every bite of food that sustains us never could be without God. The first time we lose sight of this, we fall back into thinking in terms of which we lose sight of the incredible abundance that surrounds us. We may pay for it with a credit card from our wallet, but if we do not consciously and mindfully see God in it, then really what we're doing is we are affirming poverty. If we turn to the Gospels, the story of the loaves and fishes demonstrates this. Jesus recognized that the people have been without food and asks his apostles, what's there to eat? And all that they could come up with is a small boy who has 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And Jesus doesn't ask, is that it? He doesn't say, oh, that'll never be enough. Instead, he blesses the food and gives thanks for it. Did you ever have the experience of someone dropping in unexpectedly at dinner time? And you're not quite sure that there's enough, but you invite them. You tell them to sit down, that there's going to be enough because you are so delighted to have them with you. And then your brain just gets going and you begin to get creative, finding things to serve. And it ends up being an absolutely wonderful experience. Prosperity thinking all starts with gratitude for what is at your very fingertips. It grows with your power to see possibilities beyond evidence to the contrary. And it flourishes with the understanding that God is in absolutely everything. And in everything, there is enough. In everything, there is plenty. In everything, there's abundance. When Jesus is asked, what's the price of admission to get into the kingdom? He doesn't talk about membership dues. His advice is, go and sell everything you own. And he says, give the money to the poor. He doesn't say, give the money to me to buy church. Give the money to the poor and then come and follow me. In other words, he doesn't want 10%. He wants it all. The ability to recognize abundance and to live in it isn't determined by what's in your wallet, but rather by what's in your heart. In another story in the Gospels, the Pharisees asked Jesus if they should pay taxes to the Romans or not. And Jesus just asked them, show me a coin, a denarius. And then Jesus asked, whose picture is on the coin? And they answer him, Caesar's. He then tells them to give, to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. And I think the message of this passage is simple but profound. If you're a member of something, then act like a member. If you are a citizen of Rome, pay taxes. If you're a citizen of the United States, pay taxes to the United States. If you're a Girl Scout, sell the cookies once a year. And if you dwell or want to dwell in the kingdom of God, give what is due to the kingdom of God. That is where? Within you. Just yesterday, I had a phone call with my nephew. He's like the son I never had, and I love him so dearly. He asked me if I would start sending a Zoom invitation for our Sunday services to his mom. And he told her the services were really good. And so I asked him, well, if you really believe that, where the heck have you been? And after I said it, I regretted it because I want to honor his space and didn't want to embarrass him. But his response was right on to what we're talking about. He said, no, I understand. To get what I really want, I have to start setting priorities. And if I think something is good and important, then I have to recognize what's there and go for it. Very simple, right? Also very sound. If you want to realize anything great, anything, greater health, greater joy, greater prosperity, you have to quit prioritizing or focusing on what you don't have. You have to move beyond thinking, well, that's just the way it is, and move in the direction of seeing and believing what could be. You have to move not just to acknowledging that abundance is everywhere and possibilities are endless, but to a place of customizing those possibilities according to your dreams. And you have to dare to hold that the abundance of God is everywhere, not just within you, but especially in you. Do you know how many trillions of species of life exist on our planet? And each and every one of them sings praise to the lushness of the earth and to the abundance of God. You know why I opened the talk today with that silly video of the Three Stooges? By the way, if anybody was offended by that little touch of violence in the video, I apologize. I really do. But in preparing for the talk today, that video came to mind. And so I went and I found it. When I first saw that clip way back as a kid, I had the same reaction as the Three Stooges. All of that oil that is spewing out is going to waste. It was a consciousness on my part, a consciousness of lack. Trying to cork it made all the sense in the world. I never looked at that video from the perspective of the never-ending fountain of abundance that God provides for us. I never looked at it as a never-ending fountain of abundance that's available to us. And that is everywhere and anywhere available to us. There are geysers, or as Curly would say, geezers everywhere. If we never develop and buy into this idea, we can accumulate literally billions of dollars in our portfolios, but we never will be prosperous. I don't want you to get the wrong idea about what I'm preaching today. I'm not saying that we shouldn't save money, that we shouldn't put money away for our retirement or for our children's education. I'm not saying we shouldn't negotiate the best deal we can when we buy a house or a car. And of course, our church has to put money aside to maintain the roof or in case the sewer backs up again or whatever. What's in your wallet in and of itself is of no consequence. However, the energy that we attached to it The energy that we give it determines if it is holding us back from our spiritual journeys or if it's a manifestation of our spiritual progress. Saving money for a cause doesn't show thinking of lack. It is actually practicing good stewardship, which, by the way, generates more prosperity. So, how do we get there? Very simple. We tithe. Actually, what we do is we lock in and we pray to bring forth and live in an awareness that we are swimming in spirit, surrounded by abundance. And in that context, if it's within that context, tithing then becomes a prayer, a spiritual discipline, an ongoing reminder when we get distracted by the world around us, that we are always and everywhere surrounded by the abundance of God and by the love of God. It's a way of habituating a knowing of God's tireless love and care for us. There's really nothing magical or miraculous about it. Like any prayer, if we tithe passionately and not routinely, it empowers us to tap into the abundance of ourselves. The bad news is that there is no genie in a lamp somewhere that will grant us three wishes. The good news is that you are a genie beyond your wildest imagination, empowered to fulfill every one of your endless wishes. What's in your wallet? Again, what it is really is of little or no consequence compared to what's in your wallet means to you. Because if it's a result of tapping into an awareness of the abundance that flows all around us, then you are wealthy beyond your imagination. But if it's a function of this is all that I have, then it's weighing you down because it's thinking of lack. We are so blessed in so many ways. You know, the world really truly does revolve around money in a very real sense. And that's not necessarily a bad thing if the energy that we attach to it is an awareness of the activity, the presence of God in the world. And if it's a reflection of an awakening deep within our own hearts of everything that we are and so much that we have within us that is there to share with others. And so now let's take this to prayer and meditation.